working with Flyer. When you just zone out, you put your music on and you just chat.
Excuse me, is this your taxi?
You can't mistake their anthology, a Girls Aloud commentary podcast from The Record Doctor.
Whenever you're ready.
Hello, my fellow Alouders, and welcome to yet another monthly installment of You Can't Mistake Their Anthology, The Record Doctor's Girls Aloud commentary podcast. My name's Adam Eve, and I'm your host of the podcast, the vehicle that I'm using to cover each and every single release Girls Aloud gifted upon us. Of course, the albums, the concerts, the remixes, the eras, but I'll also be covering their solo releases, autobiographies, and even their incredible off-the-record mini-series. The plan is to cover it all. And so far, we've talked about Nadine's Irish Pop Stars run on episode 1, the entire Sound of the Underground and Pop Stars The Rivals era with special guest Craig on episode 2, the full What Will the Neighbours Say era for episode 3 with special guest Ed Pitts, the Bonza Chemistry and Christmas Tree era for episode 4 with special guest Benatar, and the killer B-side breakdown of every Girls Aloud B-side for episode 5 last month with the BBC's Mark Savage. But this month on the pod, we're doing something a little different. This is probably the most exciting episode for me personally so far of Anthology. One of the many things that made Girls Aloud so incredibly special was the way they were able to sync their music up so brilliantly with visual campaigns. Everything from the videos to the artwork, especially between 2004 and 2006, was impeccable. So it should be of no surprise to you all listening that a discussion around some of those visuals was something that I really wanted to try and explore at length with the podcast at some point. And quite amazingly, that time is now. My very, very special guest this month is a co-founder of the UK-based graphic design and branding studio Form, who, outside of Girls Aloud, have also designed some of our collective fave pop releases from people like Rachel Stevens, Everything But the Girl, The Saturdays, Bright Light, Bright Light, All Saints, Natalie Imbruglia, E17, and club music fans such as myself will remember the absolutely iconic artwork on the killer 187 lockdown classic Gunman, which is sitting right in that shelf of my record collection, funnily enough. It is my absolute honour to welcome onto You Can't Mistake Their Anthology, Form UK's Paul West. Hello, Paul. How are you going?
Oh, wow. That's quite an intro. I'm not quite sure what to say. I'm flattered and honored.
Oh, my gosh. First of all, I've just got to say thank you so very much for taking the time to chat to me on the podcast today.
You're welcome. Looking forward to it.
Amazing. Now, Paul is joining me this month to talk all about the work Form produced for Girls Aloud during their reign of the pop charts. In my personal opinion, the artwork Form produced across the girls' What Will the Neighbours Say and Chemistry eras really helped in the creation of their visual legacy, to the point that the artwork across both eras Form worked on have not a single dud amongst them. But before we get into the Aloud visuals, Paul, I'd love to know how you originally got into graphic design work, particularly with music.
Sure. It's quite funny, actually, because whenever I read journalists, music journalists or bands, biographies or interviews, so many times it really happens from a very kind of like slightly, I wouldn't say a boring upbringing, but a kind of like living in a town where you kind of like wanted to escape, and things like comics and especially music for me were the portals into a slightly more exciting world. I don't want to be too belittling about my hometown because it was and is a wonderful place, but of course, when you're a teenager and through that natural rebelling stage, you'd rather be anywhere than here, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
I was very lucky to be one of the youngest of quite a large family. All of my brothers and sisters were huge music fans. So when I was growing up, the house was really filled with Roxy Music, David Bowie, Pink Floyd, which, of course, remain incredibly informative. My breakthrough came with punk and new wave, and all of the offshoots of the music that surrounded it, especially Grace Jones nightclubbing. And when I just think back to my formative years, all spent at friends' houses, listening to music, really poring through the record covers, really looking at the photographs, looking at the track listing, looking at the producers, even things like the copyright logos for the record companies. Things that, sadly, in today's digital world, people don't even know the names of tracks anymore, let alone the amazing producers. And as you will well know, the producers of Girls Aloud, for example, were just incredible. Mm-hmm. And these are all things that I developed through my, I suppose, analog life of looking at record covers. And, you know, the joy of opening a gatefold and just kind of seeing this huge expanse of visual and imagery, that was really a driving point. In terms of design, I just loved all of the punk logos of the era. I loved UK Subs, The Clash, 999, X-Ray Specs, just all these brilliant, brilliant logos. And of course, I went through the stage of writing them and drawing them down on your school books. And I guess that was really the nurturing period. It's always been about music with me, always, always. I was never in a band. So my only foray into the music industry was to be the designer and the art director and meet the bands that way.
Right, right. And how did Form originally begin? How did you decide to start Form, and what was the step that got you to there?
Well, I had met Paula, my partner. We had met basically kind of mutual friends. I went to college. We both went to college in London, but we went to different colleges. And we kind of met through mutual best friends. I suppose the moment where it really clicked actually was at an amazing acid house night called The Fridge in Brixton in the late 80s. And we kind of met that. We really met then and just had a great time, just kind of like just dancing and just chatting. And it kind of started from there, really. We just sat there one day and just had a chat about what we wanted to do. And we just looked at each other and said, well, do you fancy setting up a design agency? And it was literally like that. So we set up in 1991, and that was in an incredible, incredible time. It was a strange time in the UK because, of course, there was the Gulf War, and we were just coming out of a recession, or just in a recession, I should say, and everybody was saying to us, are you mad? What a ridiculous time to do it. But we kept it really lean. We were so excited. I mean, I was 25 and Paula was 23. And, you know, when you've got that vision, you just go, 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 go. We never stopped. We never stopped working. And to a degree, we still haven't. You know, all weekends until 2 o'clock in the morning, because that was what we just had to do. And it was such an exciting time in terms of post-rave, baggy, acid, in between the kind of like the Britpop years. And the pop explosion, of course, which happened all around. We were very, very fortunate. And I was just saying, one of the things I'm so happy about with this interview is it's kind of allowed me to do a little bit of trawling back. And I've always been aware that we were in a very, very fertile era at that time in the kind of 90s. But you kind of tend to forget a bit about it until you look back. And it was incredible. It was incredible. You know, you had the Britpop, you had grunge, Britpop, you had drum and bass, you had just kind of jungle, acid, indie, baggy, just electronica. I mean, what a collision.
There was incredible. So much going on.
Yeah.
Well, Form has produced so much incredible stuff and art for so many amazing artists. Outside of Girls Aloud, of course, are there any campaigns that you're the fondest of in pop and in music in general that you've done?
Yeah, we had a very exciting era with a very visionary manager called Tom Watkins, who I'm sure will be known amongst your listeners. Of course, Tom was famously the manager for Pet Shop Boys and Bross. We linked in with Tom over East 17, Juice, JPack, Two Thirds, and The Modern. It wasn't always an easy ride with Tom. Tom was a very, Tom could be a very hard person, but Tom could also be an incredibly generous, incredibly inspirational. I mean, an absolute inspiration sometimes. When Tom was on a roll and he had his great ideas, he just moved heaven and earth to make sure they happened. That was a very, very exciting time for us because we were quite new into the whole kind of form era. Right. So suddenly to have this Svengali just kind of like paving the way for all these great campaigns was really something. Natalie, working with Natalie was absolutely wonderful. Oh. A ray of sunshine that woman was. From the moment she'd walk into a room, when we were working on Torn with Rankin and Left of the Middle, Natalie was just, you know, she'd just walk into a room and go, "Hi, how is everybody's day? Are we happy?" We'd all go, "Yeah." And she'd go, "Oh, amazing." You know, blah, 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 blah. It would just be really, that was Natalie. And the whole campaign was great. I mean, there's been so many, working with Depeche Mode, working with Everything But the Girl, Scritti Politti, a band who I have always idolized, working with Green on Anime and Bonomy in 1999 was good. I could go on all day because Paul and I have always managed to find the best out of any campaign that we've worked with.
Right. I did mention to you the other day, actually, that I discovered that truly wonderful short documentary about Form that's on Vimeo. And my jaw figuratively dropped to the floor when I saw your wonderful pop scrapbook in action. That is quite literally a scrapbooked Bible of UK pop music history. And I'm assuming you still have it.
I've got it right behind me.
Oh, that's amazing. Can you just sort of please tell the folks at home just sort of the gist of what fills the pages of this sacred book?
Well, as I mean, in anybody in the creative, whether you're an illustrator, photographer, designer, whatever, I mean, everybody likes to keep scrapbooks. They might be Polaroids of the shoot setups, initial logo ideas, signed photos, and really everything that I ever worked on, I just basically collected mementos and stuck them in this massive book, which is so unwieldy now. It's like literally falling apart. I'll show you after this podcast so you can see it. Yeah. Huge thing. And I was looking at it a couple of days ago while kind of just mentally preparing for this podcast, and just all these Polaroids of the girls, which I had kind of just either squirreled away, or when we were doing photo shoots, you'd kind of collect a couple which were on the floor and just think, "Oh, I'll just take them." But that's with everything from Girls Aloud, Paul Oakenfold, East 17. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. And it's lovely. And most of my friends are photographers anyway. So just loads of shots of, you know, kind of Rankin pictures and all manner of things have just collected in this crazy book.
Amazing. All the few seconds I've got to see of the Girls Aloud Love Machine magazine covers in such large and high quality just made my heart sing a bit. Paul, are you aware just how sought after high quality versions of those magazine shots and the Neighbours promo vinyl artwork are by the fan base?
To be honest with you, no, I'm not. But Instagram's been quite interesting because through Instagram, I've realised that the massive interest in bands like Girls Aloud is just incredible. So that I'll take on board what you've said then.
I mean, I mentioned to a couple of friends that I would be speaking to you, and the first thing they both brought up separately, mind you, were the Love Machine magazine covers and that vinyl promo shot. And obviously the Chemistry Christmas image, but I'll get to that a little later on.
Sure,
but,
sure.
So, Paula, myself and the listeners are, I guess, dying to hear all about your self-informed story with Girls Aloud and how that officially began.
Well, basically, we had worked with Polydor, the record company that Girls Aloud were on. We had worked with Polydor quite a few times in the past, maybe just slightly before the Girls Aloud. Probably most famously, well, certainly in the UK, was Hearsay, who were the pop star, the very first pop star kind of like virtual group. Is that the right word to say?
It's not virtual. From the pop star series, the first season.
Yeah, that's right. So that was with Polydor. And we had worked really successfully with the band for two albums. And I think we showed our kind of like art direction prowess and ability to work with the bands. So when Girls Aloud were going through the second wave of their campaign, which was obviously What Will Their Neighbours Say, post Sound of the Underground, we were invited to pitch for the girls, because what Polydor wanted to do at the time was they basically wanted to make the Five Girls household names. Everybody knew the band, but I think they very much knew them as pop stars, the rivals, that the band, the great girl band who won. And our job really was to make them all, everybody would know the names. So we, I think for our inspiration, might be a little bit sketchy, it's going back a few years now, but really our main inspiration was film posters. Posters like Bullet, Modesty Blaze, a lot of the kind of Casino Royale, very early posters. Oh, things like kind of Faster Pussycat, kind of like Russ Meyer kind of stuff. God. Because we wanted the girls to be themselves. We wanted them to be very strong, very feisty, but very feminine. And we didn't want them to be kind of like speech marks manufactured. We wanted their personalities to naturally come out of the photo shoot. So I think what we wanted to do, we just wanted to create lots of situations with props more than anything to really let the girls kind of like ad lib. And I thought what the label really loved was the fact that pretty much on every sleeve around the kind of What Will the Neighbours Say campaign, we always put the names, the girls' names on there. It'd be like starring, you know, yes. Nadine, Sarah, Sha. And I think that really tickled a lot of people's kind of like, you know, funny bones on that, because it was kind of quite cute, yeah. But it also looked really good because our typography that we used with the girls was always very minimalist. And that's the way that we've always liked to work. We like a really kind of like quite effervescent kind of logo. We love working with really amazing photographers, but our typography is always very minimalist. And I think that's been one of the things that people have always liked about the girls' campaign, because people have seen the seriousness in the layout, although it's very bright and colorful and pow and, you know, angular. It's quite simplistic. And there's a lovely balance between that kind of sensibility and the girls being allowed to be themselves. So really that was one of the ideas. And we did a kind of mock film poster for the show, because all we knew, that was going to be the first single from What Will the Neighbours Say. We didn't even know the album then. It was just the next single was called The Show. So we just thought, okay, The Show, well, this is nice. This is kind of quite filmic. So we just suggested a palette of angular images and girls cut out on white backgrounds, and you know, and that's really what became The Show. But what was also lovely, and this is what I need to stress this, because the only reason why we've been allowed to walk away with a lovely campaign for the band is down to so many people, and Polydor were incredible to work with. They gave us so much creative freedom. They gave us positivity, and I can't describe how much it was being in a team with Girls Aloud. Everybody was really locked in, and it was just exciting. And to be honest with you, when you're in an environment of that much excitement, the ideas just flow, because you just think, let's do that. And of course, Poppy and Peter would go, oh my God, this is amazing, this is great, the girls would love it, and you're away. So it was The Show which started it. Now, the other great thing about The Show was that there were always four formats. There were two CD promos. There was a kind of a promo, and there was a DJ promo. Then there was a commercial CD1 and a commercial CD2. So that allowed us to basically have fun with the design. So for example, with the normal promo of The Show, that was just the director's chairs with all the girls' names.
Yes.
And that's one thing that always went on with the Girls Aloud promos. We always had one promo, which was almost like if the girls could be a pair of sunglasses or a pair of shoes, what would they be? So that was always the first promo. The second promo was when the typography became quite illustrated. So, for example, with the show's DJ, I don't know if you can remember, I'm sure you can, it was a black sleeve with The Show in a very kind of like outlined kind of like. And then that's what made its way over to the commercial CD1 and the commercial CD2. I hope you're hanging in there.
I am. I'm loving this. This is fantastic.
And really that became this very, very rich source of kind of cross-pollination. So the promos always became the commercials in a certain way. So with CD DJ too, with the kind of like the big kind of quite star-spangled the show,
yes.
That's what became the typography for the CD2 commercial, right. If you see what I mean.
Yes,
and that
yes.
generally happened with all of the releases.
Well, on yeah. What Will the Neighbours Say, as this was all happening, you were beginning to sort of collage together actual printed photos of all the girls into what we now know as their greatest fold-out inlay artwork ever. And, of course, the I'll Stand By You artwork. But can you talk me through that collage manual yeah. process?
Yeah, well, it's all thanks to the photo shoots, really, that idea even happened. Because all I knew is that we were working with Pete Beavis, the photographer for the whole What Will the Neighbours Say campaign. Well, Simon Clemenger, the photographer, he worked on the show, but everything else on What Will the Neighbours Say was Pete Beavis. So we had a really good kind of close working relationship with Pete, and I said, right, what I really want to do, I just want it to be a fold out, and I just want lots of, you know, different band members, big, small, into this incredible collage. So what we did when we were working with the girls in the studio, I would cut out Polaroids and I'd stick them together just almost to get like a working process. Right, how's Nicola looking next to Nadine? How's Sarah looking next to Cheryl? How's Kimberly looking? And it just started looking so good just on this big kind of like, you know, masking tape strip. I thought, wow, let's just do that. So really that was the idea that became the actual release. We weren't quite so crude in the release, but what we did do, of course, we shot the girls on a white background. So we kind of, you know, we could cut around them easily in post and just juxtapose them together. And on top of that, we thought, let's just have this crazy pop art mosh of all of their all of their track titles, all illustrated. And it was just this kind of like riot of color that really worked.
So, so beautiful. Well, meeting the girls for the first time, what were they like to work with initially, and were they quite particular about how they themselves wanted to look?
My honest answer is no, because such was the level of trust with the what we called the glam squad in terms of the styling, the hair and the makeup.
Yes.
They had obviously been working with the girls, so there was a complete level of trust there. The relationship between the label and the band were so kind of like loving and nurturing. We just basically went in and introduced ourselves. I said to, you know, the girls what we wanted to do from that shoot. They were just 100% into it, and they remained 100% into it. I can honestly say there was never, in all of the photo shoots that we did over, I worked with three different photographers on the two campaigns, never an issue, always up for it, always. And sometimes the girls would come in, they'd literally come in at 6 o'clock in the morning and they'd just kind of like touched down from doing a kind of PR in Europe, like 5 hours earlier. They'd come in exhausted, kind of like sleep for a bit, then bang, up. And 100%. It was brilliant. It was an incredible time.
What was the creative process like in the creation of that logo for the second album?
Again, that was really influenced from very filmic references. A lot of, you know, a lot of the old films, say, of the kind of 50s and 60s were very kind of like, you know, the attack of the 50-foot woman. And it was all like crazy perspective. Yeah. I think there was a Ben-Hur logo as well, which was just this hugely perspectived logo. And I just think we wanted something epic. Mm-hmm. So the idea of, like, you know, girls going one way, allowed going the other way, but with this kind of crazy vanishing point. And luckily it just created this beautiful diamond kind of shaped logo, which was really easy to work with. So What Will the Neighbours Say, the actual album, of course, the girls were all kind of housed around that logo, and it worked. Yes, it worked. It worked well.
Yeah, it really did. Love Machine came next on the line. We've discussed the show. And look, talk about iconic. Two of the greatest Girls Aloud single covers of all time, and particularly so when talking about the CD2 version, featuring those aforementioned Girls Aloud magazine covers. How did the genius of that come to be?
That's really kind, thank you. We just thought, Girls Aloud Love Machine. Wow, let's just do a series of magazines. And again, this is what we were saying earlier. This was an opportunity to let the girls' personalities come out. This is basically five separate photo shoots. So this wasn't all of them together. This was them on their own, jumping up and down on trampolines.
Oh, wow.
You know, Sarah, of course. Sarah, when she was the kind of like the GI, kind of like, you know, she was... I've got a couple of little videos that I took of all of them while they were being photographed, just because they were enjoying it so much. I just wanted to remember it. And Sarah was fantastic. It brought a little bit of a tear to the eye, actually, just seeing this girl just jumping up and down on the trampoline, so into it. Kimberly, again, when she was the Eskimo, Nicola as the surfer. They're all jumping up and down, but so in the zone. Cheryl was the kind of cat, so she was very, you know, demure and feline, and Nadine was the kind of prehistoric. I suppose it's all kind of slightly filmic references coming through again. We wanted something like Nadine is almost a bit like, you know, 1 million years BC, you know, and that thing. And we just thought, well, why can't we just lampoon some magazines? And I'm really happy that you've picked this one out, because I don't think anybody actually knows just how much work went into that sleeve. Because we had to do five different magazine designs. Mm. We had to art direct five different shoots. We had to design the magazines, print the magazines out, put the magazines together, photograph the magazines just to do the cover. And I guess nowadays it would just all be purely Photoshop.
Right.
But back then, of course, you know, I mean, it was what, 2004? Mm-hmm. Although, of course, we were well and truly into Mac. Let's just say, this is like 3 years before the iPhone came out. So just as a kind of a context. So there was still this analog digital marriage going on.
Definitely, definitely. Especially through this era, because a lot of the old footage that I have, it's all on VHS or MPEG that I downloaded from the Girls Aloud Media Forum. And it's like, you know, tiny little window. Very much a sign of its time.
Yeah, for sure.
Following on from Love Machine came the UK number one Children in Need charity cover, I'll Stand By You. I love both of those covers. Once again, and as previously mentioned, this was, I guess, the first appearance of the collage.
Yes. I think what must have happened is, I think around... Because obviously when the girls were so popular at this stage in terms of their commitments, in terms of where they had to be at any one stage, we had to almost kind of block book in. Like, for example, when we did the show, that was just for the show. When we did Love Machine, we did Love Machine, you know, so we had the girls kind of all with their fantastic sunglasses. That was very much a shoot for Love Machine. I think by the time we got to... single number three, we almost had to do a photo shoot for two singles and the album.
Right.
So a lot of that work came from literally individual shots of the girls on white screen. And then, of course, a lot of post from us, I suppose, actually bringing them together to create What Will the Neighbours Say, Stand By You. So the album and single, they were both born very much of the same kind of... I suppose, necessity to create something from individual stills.
Was the brief a little more subdued for I'll Stand By You, given it was a charity single, or no real limits?
Yeah, we wanted it to be. I mean, of course, I loved the Pretenders earlier version. And yeah, you know, so I always remember that lovely shot of Nadine for I'll Stand By You, because she takes center stage, and it's just a lovely shot of her. And I think that, you know, for every shot of like Nadine looking like that, we had gone through lots of different versions, a little bit more kind of like biff, bang, pow kind of imagery. But we just wanted to have something a little bit more subdued for that single due to the nature of it.
Do you have any particular memories or stories that you can recall of working with the girls through this era that are at the top of your mind when you think of that era, that time?
Yeah, for sure it would have been Love Machine. That was such good fun. It was just funny, just laughing with kind of like joy at just how everybody was so into it. And we haven't talked about it yet, but I really loved Wake Me Up. That was a great photo shoot. I mean, really, really brilliant, because that was, again, let's just do a real kind of like rock out cover.
Yes.
And working, I mean, I love, you know, who doesn't love those great big lights, you know, these huge kind of like, you know, cinema type lights. So when Pete, the photographer, you know, for the promo, which was just the five lights, mm-hmm. I think we shot that, we might have shot that first, as the girls were basically being kind of like made up and getting into the vibe. I think we just quickly shot off that for the promo. And even seeing the five lights, we just knew it was going to be a great day because it just looked really epic. And then when the girls, and the other thing I loved about that was Sarah made that her own, because, you know, everybody talks about Sarah as being, you know, the slightly more kind of like rocky one, I suppose. Mm-hmm. It's just really funny how the girls' personalities naturally gravitated towards each right. single. So Sarah dominated Wake Me Up.
Oh, absolutely.
And she, you look at it, when you look at her on the front, that was Sarah's vibe.
Right, right. Well, it's funny, I've got the 7-inch singles behind me, the picture discs of Love Machine and Wake Me Up. Treasured. Well, the Wake Me Up 7-inch was the first Girls Aloud piece of vinyl I ever owned. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, but let's talk about it. Up next, the next yeah. single was the final one from What Will the Neighbours Say, which was Wake Me Up, an edgy biker pop feel. This is another one that's really, really loved by the fans, Paul, as well. So,
oh, right, okay.
Working on this release.
You know, we kind of knew when we heard the track, it was like, right, okay. So, I mean, the great thing is that, you know, we've got so many reference books, and like I said, a lot of our friends remain, a lot of our friends to this day are photographers. So at any one time, we'd just be getting so much kind of like visual reference through, and it was quite an easy idea to do, because it's really the girls around the lights. So when you think about that, it's like, well, this is all down to the girls to kind of really make this work. We've created this wonderful little environment, but it's all down to them. What I liked about CD2 with the badges, mm-hmm. and again, it's a lot of work went into that, you know, we kind of, after the photo shoot, we had to go through the five individual girls that we really liked. We had to make badges of them, actual badges, you know, real badges. They weren't just kind of actually put them on a, put them on a denim jacket and photograph that again. And the reason why we wanted to do that was, there's a kind of imperfection in a badge. It would have been the easiest thing just to to Photoshop a circle of the band as a badge, but it wouldn't have looked real. It's like, and if you look at that shot again, you know, the reproduction of the girls' faces, they're not brilliant, but that's what a badge is.
Right.
And it had to be that real. So that was good. And I'm actually just really happy with the typography, because I was like looking at it thinking, okay, this is kind of quite a busy kind of cover. What do I do? Do I want to kind of like apologetically put the type kind of like top left on? Then I thought, Girls Aloud, Wake Me Up, but Wake Me Up, and just off center it. It was just like, bam. And that nice. Really worked. That was great fun. And so, yeah, I'm just trying to think if there's anything else really noteworthy about that in particular session. But again, the memories are, just playing, just stuff like probably Van Halen, AC/DC, really loud, just to really get them into it.
This was also the first piece of art, stepping away from the big dynamic movie style logo and going into the font just before the fan
yeah.
in chemistry.
Yeah, but what we really love doing, and I'm sure you'll probably be aware of it, we love just the whole kind of cataloging of the logo. So even though it wasn't the center stage logo, it's always there somewhere. It might be tiny by the barcode or like inside, almost like a kind of a company kind of like logo.
Yes.
And as much as I love that, you know, big three-dimensional Girls Aloud, there were sometimes it was limiting, in as much as it was such a defined shape, right. Whereas Wake Me Up had to be something a lot more kind of like dynamic, I suppose.
Right.
And of course, there's a natural evolution, isn't there? You always want to keep a kind of like, you know, a consistency, but have a little bit of fun with it, which involves a degree of development, I guess.
Well, speaking of favourites, in 2005, Form really fed the fan base with the remarkably beautiful artwork across both CD 1 and 2 of the first single to be lifted off Chemistry, which was Long Hot Summer. For the first CD image featuring a group shot from the video, whilst the maxi and 12-inch vinyl single, which I have behind me signed by all of the girls when they came to Melbourne, feature the girls as sippy straws inside a giant cocktail glass, one of the most gloriously camp and beautiful artworks of all time. Was it as fun to create that as it looks like it was, and what was the story behind how that came to be?
Okay, I'll send you a photograph of the original inspiration for this.
Amazing.
Paul and I bought, I think they must have been like 1950. I keep going on like 1950s. I don't come from that era. But we bought some cocktail sticks, and they were in the 1950s style. You know, I know everything's changed now, but in the 1950s style, it was just some kind of like typical 1950s girls as cocktail sticks.
Right.
And we thought that would make a ridiculously good cover if fed through the Girls Aloud world.
Right.
So we thought, okay, so that could work. So Long Hot Summer swimming pool. How about if the pool was actually a cocktail? And how about if the palm tree was a cocktail, whatever, umbrella?
Right.
And it really developed from there. So we showed it to the label, who in turn showed it to the band, and everybody really liked the idea of it. This was a new photographer that we were working with called Sean McMenemy, who is absolutely amazing. Sean basically worked, I think I wrote it down, so he did From Long Hot Summer to See the Day,
yes.
Including, well, my favourite sleeve, which we haven't talked about yet.
Mm-hmm.
that was really the idea of it. And again, what we did, we shot each of the girls sitting on a really high stool and just allowed them to let their own personalities come through. And really, the kind of like the configuration of the girls, I think Nadine on the left, I think it's Cheryl on the right, Kimberly on the, or I can't remember, Cheryl in the middle, Kimberly on the right, I can't remember.
Kimberly
on the right.
Nadine on the left.
It was really governed on how they sat on the stool. And I remember Kimberly kind of just turned round and thought, well, that's got to be the right-hand shot. So A lot of it, there's a bit of freestyling. We kind of know what we want, but it's all down to the girls to dictate their own way how it worked.
Such a gorgeous shot as well. My goodness. Well, in that same year, and speaking of, Girls Aloud released what, in my opinion, remains not only their greatest single of all time, it's also their greatest video clip, and it's also their greatest piece of single artwork. Of course, I'm talking about Biology. CD1 yeah. Served up a glamorous group shot highlighting the sleek and pencil-skirting new look of the era, while CD2 geniusly served the girls up in individual test tubes. Paul, you previously said that the test tube artwork was indeed inspired by the X-Ray Specs album Germ-Free yeah. Adolescence, but
yeah.
How did you get into the creation of this idea? An idea that so many of us in the fanbase consider the single greatest piece of single artwork from them.
Well, I used to work before, I worked for a couple of different design groups before I set up Form with Paula. One of them being Peter Saville Associates. So that was the whole kind of like New Order factory era.
Oh, wow.
Now, yeah, and Peter shared a studio with Trevor Key. Trevor Key being probably one of the, well, in to my mind, one of the greatest photographers ever. I mean, think of Tubular Bells. All of the New Order covers, for goodness sake. True Faith, which is one of my favourite ever single covers. That's the gold leaf on blue, just beautiful. And Trevor also shot Germ-Free Adolescence. Now, I was talking to Trevor one day. This is going way back. This is kind of 87, 88. I was in Trevor's studio chatting with him, and he had this huge pile of Polaroids. I was just like looking through them, and True Faith was there, and Germ-Free Adolescence was there. And I've always loved that cover, and I never knew that it was Trevor that did it. And blah, 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 blah. I went through the fanboy moment of kind of going, oh, my God. And that's always just been one of the most amazing covers for me. So when Biology came, I just thought, what could be more amazing than openly homaging a punk classic? And it just, that was the great thing about working with Girls Aloud. You could do that. You could drop something like a punk iconic image into the frame, and the girls would just rock it. So we showed it to the record label, and I said, I want to be so open about this. We have to homage Germ-Free Adolescence on the back sleeve. There can't be any kind of like, I wanted it to be known that it was from Germ-Free Adolescence. And again, Sean McMenemy did the shoot. So what we actually did, we set up a series of almost like a kind of like two perspex walls.
Right.
So if you can imagine, the girls were in a kind of a corridor, very tight, of two sheets of perspex. And they were just basically improvising in the shape. So if you can imagine that there was a shape of, say, kind of like just wider than kind of like shoulders width, that they were in the little enclosure, and their hands were up, and they were acting like they were in a space.
Right.
And from that, we kind of cut them out, and we took a photograph of the five test tubes, and we dropped them in the test tubes in post-production.
Oh, it was particularly genius, not just for the test tubes themselves, but also the fact, I mean, referencing a UK pop band and doing so at a time where people were declaring Girls Aloud genre as being party liner punk. It all tied in so brilliantly. And I think I speak for every Girls Aloud fan when I say thank you.
Well, it's my favourite ever cover for Girls Aloud. It makes me really just so happy whenever I see it. It's such an iconic image. When you see the five test tubes, it just looks great.
Yeah, definitely. It's, yeah, I've said everything I probably need to say about that cover. It's just so, so bloody good.
But that was the fun, you see. That was the fun of the CD too. That's what we did all the way along with the whole campaign for Girls Aloud. It's CD two was always the, you know, let's really kick out the box. That was Love Machine, you know, the magazine covers. That was the great thing.
Yeah, but this was, you know, during a time as well when that was the norm, where you would get CD one, CD two, and the digital was still just sort of coming up.
So just to interrupt your flow, that's a really interesting point that you just said then. And can you remember, so many bands, the CD two would be a really boring interpretation of CD one. So say, for example, CD one would be like a full bleed image. CD two would be the CD one image, but really small, surrounded in a color, like a real afterthought kind of collectible. Whereas we thought, this has got to be a real coveted item. Mm-hmm. CD two has got to be the thing that everybody talks about.
And it still is to this day for so many of those releases from the Girls Aloud era. Speaking of visual delights, up next was the gorgeous artwork for the DC Lee cover, See the Day, with the girls lying down on the ground as one giant snowflake. Again, that's one of the greatest single artworks ever. How different to Biology was the brief to execute on See the Day?
Oh, you're going to love this. I think it was probably a 1950s reference. Wah, wah. Oh dear, I need to seriously think about this. I just think, you know, when you just look at these really, again, these kind of classic old movies, and it was all very much the aerial shots, you know, the kind of the panning round shots of the actors in situations. And I guess that was really the idea. We thought, well, wouldn't it be great if they were just, you know, just lying down, but creating a shape through that. So again, that involves a fair amount of work in terms of a very, very high rig looking down at the girls to do that. In a nutshell, really, that was the idea, just to recreate a kind of Hollywood-esque, again, kind of like filmic, which is what follows the girls all the way through the campaign.
Released in the final month of 2005 came Girls Aloud's Incredible Chemistry and Christmas Tree Record. Very lush portrait-focused visual for the original Chemistry album artwork and the booklet. It's presented a cleaner, crisper look from the girls. Can you talk me through how that came to be?
Yeah, that was working with an absolutely wonderful photographer called Elizabeth Hoff. As I remember, I think this was very governed by the label. It was very much the idea that this was time to start, you know, if I say growing the girls up, I don't mean that in a stupid way, but obviously the idea for them to kind of like appeal to, say, you know, other markets probably governed the way that it was very much wanted a very beautiful Vogue-esque album cover shot. And the Christmas album, again, was very much, well, that's what it was going to be, because it was out near Christmas. I think that the whole point was, let's have Girls Aloud Christmas. I'm just trying to think of the words. It's not the world. It's just like an environment, I guess. Mm. So all of that environment was built. So when was Sarah sitting on the table, and I think Nadine's got the turkey in the oven, and I think Kimberly's opening a present. All of that was constructed. Wow. And again, I found some photos, I think yesterday, just kind of like arriving at the really large space. I cannot remember where it was shot, but it was in London, and it was a huge space, just with this environment just being created just for this lead image.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's such a striking shot. I mean, this is another one, like with the Love Machine magazine covers, this is one that people bring up all the time because it's such an iconic photo. And that album as well, I mean, when I think about that album, the Christmas album, before Girls Aloud's Christmas disc came, my obvious and immediate go-to every holiday was the Mariah album. But like since 2005, it's all about the Girls Aloud one, and I listen to it all year round as well. And I remember every Christmas for ages, that photo was the wallpaper on my desktop PC back in the day. Just so iconic. So iconic.
It's difficult to say without sounding like I'm just basically kind of saying the same old thing, but it was all about, all I can remember about that is just the great memory of the day and just how exciting it was. I seem to think, I might be wrong, I think that might have been a 2-day photo shoot because there was such a lot to capture. I might be wrong. I mean, that was always just an incredible thing, you know, two days with Girls Aloud in terms of just, you know, you just wake up in the morning and go, yes, what are we doing today? We're going to work, you know, and good fun. And again, you know, because it was Christmas or the approach of Christmas, it was all quite exciting.
Do you have any cherished memories of working through that era that we haven't scratched the surface of yet?
I don't think so, just simply because I think Long Hot Summer, you know, when we did CD1 with that huge, beautiful kind of like Chevy. And that was great fun. And yeah, just the girls on the seats for the cocktail sticks. It's just it's all over just a really good kind of like memory vibe, really.
Well, finally on the list, yet another striking and iconic 2-CD single set for the wonderful and final Chemistry single, 2006's Whole Lotta History. Let's talk about that artwork first. The first artwork featuring the girls all dressed in white with the black belts and accents set to one of the most striking backgrounds that we'd seen the girls stand in front of. On Instagram, you recently mentioned in a comment on one of the podcast posts all about that shoot and the wallpaper. Could you please tell that story again for my listeners?
Yeah, well, Paula's a real interiors furniture freak. She's constantly looking. And I think at that time, we were really into the whole Bieber, just this whole kind of, you know, just the whole Bieber look of kind of London in the 60s, Barbara Hulanicki, and just these beautiful kind of like flock wallpapers. And that was very much, we just wanted a kind of Bieber vibe. So we got this beautiful wallpaper as, you know, floor to ceiling as a kind of colorama. And then the girls just turned up, which was fantastic. I didn't know they were going to be dressed the way they were, just in white with these black belts on that Bieber. I say Bieber, I can't be 100% sure it is, but it was Bieber inspired.
Right.
And of course, the way that Elizabeth did the lighting, we had this beautiful gold shapes on the wallpaper that just started kind of like really popping and pinging off. And this is the only problem about working with CMYK. I won't get into a boring kind of like printing thing. But in RGB, which is the way, you know, when a photograph is taken in RGB, and of course, when you go online and you see a JPEG, of course, that's RGB, you get incredible colors. But CMYK, which is printing, can sometimes really flatten colors. And that was a situation where the actual photograph for that shot was incredible. But then when it actually came back printed, it was a little bit like, oh no, we've lost this amazing, you know, popping kind of gold. Right. But it's still a beautiful cover.
So gorgeous. And speaking of CD2, which saw the girl star in their own Whole Lotta History movie poster, which circles it back to that big, big grand movie idea. It honestly just makes me wish that there had been a Parasite Girls Aloud movie. But this is another one that's rightfully held up to a pedestal by a lot of the fan base. So how did the idea for that one come to be?
Like you've just quite accurately said, just a mixture of film posters where, you know, what we always love about film posters is in a frame you have to tell a story. Right. And that might be, you know, a kind of a combination of collages, or it might be just like one in particular shot. And we wanted it to look a little bit kind of like Pulp, a little bit, yeah, you know, kind of like romantic books, but also a kind of, I think there's a really amazing poster for a film called Belle du Jour, I seem to remember, and also Modesty Blaze, again, kind of like quite 60s references, but it's all down to what, you know, what the kind of protagonists, the women are wearing in that shot. And it was just this kind of sense of drama that we wanted to put together. So I think it was like Cheryl was the, you know, kind of, again, you know, just like lying down. She was almost like the femme fatale, you know, the kind of the noirish woman lying down. But then you had Kimberly, who was almost kind of like out in the rain. I think Sarah had a pen in her mouth. I think Nadine had a phone and she was like looking round. And it was that kind of thing. We just wanted that drama, but to be bathed in black. And again, it was, you know, all these things, there are so many messages that are given out on record covers. And I seem to remember that there was a little bit of a kind of raised eye that the girls were basically shrouded in black. It was all a bit like, oh, it's not exactly very kind of, you know, really bright and jumping out. And we said, well, no, but why should it be? Because the girls are dressed in white. They're taking up the majority of the sleeve. And it's dramatic.
Yeah.
And that's what we went with. And really no kind of, you know, no reticence or nothing put up, because the label and management company and everybody believed in it.
Right. It's interesting as well that a lot of the time, like you said, with the CD2, so in the singles box set that came out in the little case, a lot of the cases it was CD1 art. So that is typically a lot of the time the art that's associated with the single these days when you look it up online. But it's always interesting to find when you speak to fans, especially, it's always that CD2 art that everyone talks about and everyone loves, and everyone's like, why can't I find that one on there? Why isn't that one on the single? So yeah, it's really, really fascinating talking about all that stuff.
Yeah. Okay, that's good to know.
I would have loved to see what Form would have come up with for the girls for their greatest hits, Sound of the Girls Aloud artwork. But is there any particular singles or album campaigns from the girls that you didn't work on that you would have maybe really liked to?
The Promise.
Right, yeah.
Just because it's just such a brilliant track. It's so, so brilliant. Mm-hmm. I would say that one more than anything, actually.
Yeah.
Was just a great, it's a great pop record, isn't it?
Oh, such a great song. And of course,
yeah,
winning them their first Brit. Were there any design pieces that you actually really loved that you did for the girls that were rejected by their team or even the girls themselves?
No. Whatever we would do, of course, you know, I am covered, going back to what would the neighbours say. For the actual image that we used, there were loads and loads of permutations, not white backgrounds, you know, kind of blue backgrounds, faded backgrounds, different colour logos, different combinations of the girls. But to be honest with you, pretty much everything, because Paul and I, we were very, very, very thorough in our shoot planning and in our objectives, what we really wanted to bring out for the singles and the albums. So to be honest with you, there was really not much margin for error, because everybody knew exactly what we really wanted to do. And that was all done at the visual stage, the kind of, you know, the pitching the concept stage. So by the time the label, the management or the girls said, yeah, that looks good, they knew that that's what would be happening. So all of the work really was done up front in terms of getting to the photo shoot, and everything afterwards was, I think, relatively seamless because we all knew what we were going to do.
Well, Form also worked on a few of the Saturday's best visual releases. Were the briefs between the girl groups a bit similar to each, or do you think that's sort of a comparison by some of the fans that's just a bit of a lazy one?
Oh, I don't know. It's so difficult to know because really everything... Of course, you could argue there's definitely a lineage, but it's what we do at Form, really, in right. terms of that. That's what was right. I mean, All Fired Up.
Cover that artwork, incredible.
Well, that was really, and I'll tell you what was unintentional but worked so well was, you know, when each of the girl was looking through the kind of the curtain, we didn't expect to do the colour backdrops. We thought the colour backdrops were all going to be one uniform colour.
Right.
And it was only in post that we actually started experimenting, thinking, oh, wow, this looks great. This is like a real kind of beam-me-up rainbow kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, one could argue that could definitely be a Girls Aloud sleeve, but what can you do when you've got a team of five artists that they're a band, but they very much want to be a personality.
Right, right.
It's difficult to know how that could be, but there's a kind of cleanliness to the Saturdays that we did, which I really love, and I love the album cover they're all, you know, just kind of shoulder shots that just work really beautifully. Yeah.
Gorgeous, gorgeous shots. Is there any artist in pop music or music in general right now, even, that you would enjoy creating a visual campaign for?
Yeah, two immediately. Wolf Alice and Hatchie.
Ah, right. Amazing choices.
I saw Mona Lisa Smile, I think 2014, I think it was. No, 2012, I think it was. Music Week, band to watch for next year. Saw Wolf Alice, Mona Lisa Smile, watched it on video, and that was it forever. I love that band. I can't tell you how many times I've seen them. They're just brilliant, and Blue Weekend is mind-blowing. Hatchie used to be on a label called Heavenly Records, where Confidence Man are on. Again, I saw Sugar and Spice. I was playing Sugar and Spice, and Paula walked in, went, "Who the hell's this? This is amazing." And then that was it. And then luckily, she was playing at this pub called the Shackleton Arms, which was just off Dalston. Oh, I'm getting confused with my years now. It must have been 2000 and, or what are we now, 22? It must have been 2000 and, well, before COVID, 2019.
Yeah.
And Harriet was playing there, and I rushed to see her, had a good chat with her, and loved Keepsake. Is just an extraordinary, extraordinary album. I love it. Her new album, absolutely great as well. Just amazing melodies. And Joe Agius, just fantastic songwriter. Great partnership.
Well, as the years have gone by, Form has branched well outside of album and single artworks and into everything from the Abbey Road studio rebranding to a fashion campaign for Adidas. I'm curious to know, Paul, we spoke about it, I guess, briefly, talking about the analog versus sort of the digital world we're in now. Has that creative process for you and Form changed quite a bit in looking at it in 2022 as opposed to what it was in the mid-2000s?
Yeah, I guess it is. I guess everything that anyone does is a product of its environment and in terms of what's needed for the campaign. I do think one thing that we've always managed to do at the studio, Paula and I, is we've always managed to inject a sense of energy and I don't want to say fun, that sounds a bit kind of trite, but some energy mixed with a real tight graphic sensibility. So, for example, Abbey Road was, again, just well, as far as I'm concerned, if you're a graphic designer, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do a branding exercise like that for the most famous recording studio in the world. I'm sure a couple of people might disagree with that, but it is.
It is.
And one of the things that we wanted to do for Abbey Road, I'll be very brief about this, was, of course, everybody thinks of Abbey Road. They think of the Zebra Crossing. They think of Beatles, et cetera, et cetera. And at the time, I think Abbey Road were exploring the idea of maybe kind of moving away from that a little bit because everybody just associated them. We said, no, you have to celebrate this, but celebrate it in a different way. So we just came up with the idea of a very monochrome set of visuals, and it's just lots of chevrons and kind of diagonal stripes. all black and white, all very much influenced by, of course, the Zebra Crossing, but we worked with this amazing artist called Patrick Thomas in terms of creating stencils and spraying and paint. And we had this really lovely kit of parts, which just worked brilliantly along merchandise. And it was very, very simple palette, black, white and red. That was it. Timeless palette. And that was great fun. Working on V Festival, again, working for, you know, Virgin Festival was a huge, huge project for us, which we worked with a typographer called Archie Proudfoot on creating an entire campaign of carnivalesque, kind of like very beautiful alphabets. That was really wonderful. So it's all these kind of collaborations that we really like doing that make it a very kind of quite a joyous exercise, I suppose, if you like. We've just spent the last 2 years rebranding an independent estate agent in the East End of London, which has been a huge project. And again, incredibly enjoyable. The company owner has been brilliant to work with. We've worked tirelessly with the team over 2 years. And the whole thing's really strange, isn't it? Because, I mean, we can't not talk about lockdown, of course, because it's been so profound for everybody. And I think in 2019 and 2020, well, I should say 2020, really, shouldn't I? We just didn't know what to expect, because all of our work literally stopped, because we were doing so much events-based work. It literally went. And we were just thinking, what are we going to do? But luckily, Paul and I, we went through a little bit of a realignment with Form a few years ago, really as an opportunity to investigate our own personal projects. Paula set up this incredible website called Film and Furniture, and it works on the premise that, say, for example, you were watching any kind of film. Let's just say, I don't know, let's just say James Bond. And let's just say that you were to look at the James Bond baddie and go, wow, that's a great chair. Or if you were to look at Batman and think, wow, in Bruce Wayne's house, that's an incredible table. Or A Clockwork Orange or Space Odyssey. Wow, what's that amazing chair? Paula is the resource where you go to. And that's just going, wow. It's called filmandfurniture.co.uk and .com. And it's really, really taking off. I do a lot more landscape art painting. That's something which I've been developing over the last 10 years, which is also going really well. So when lockdown happened, Paula went into Film and Furniture and I went into more of the kind of like the art creation. And then we picked up this project to rebrand the estate agents around July, I think July 2000. And it just powered us through an entire year of actually one of the busiest years we've ever had. And it just goes to show, it's such a kind of crazy situation that we just thought, well, here we go. This is, here we go for our worst kind of year ever.
Yeah.
And ended up in our busiest year ever, really. So that's the most up-to-date work. I worked with a Californian shoegazing band, dream pop shoegaze band called Fawns of Love. Mm-hmm. I worked on their album, which came out earlier this year, with a photographer friend called Spiros Politis. And we're pitching for a solo artist at the moment. Not allowed to say anything about that, but hopeful, because that'll be great if it works.
Amazing.
For us.
Oh, how exciting. I'll have to keep a look out, of course.
Yeah.
Paul, look, again, I just have to say thank you so, so much from the bottom of my heart for this incredible opportunity to chat to you today. These visuals are the absolute definition of pop art. So to have the privilege to chat to somebody so largely involved in them, I'm just really, really grateful and thankful. So thank you once again. Fanboy.
Welcome.
Nuts, but yeah.
I've really enjoyed it. Thanks so much. Really great questions. It's really lovely just to answer such pertinent questions, really. And of course, you're such a fan of the band. It's been lovely to talk about it.
Oh, thank you so much, Paul. That means a lot. If the people at home are looking to check out Form UK or yourself, how can they find you online?
Well, the website is formuk.com. In desperate need of an overhaul. We've been too busy to do any. It's an age-old problem about websites. So yeah, we've got to redo that. So it's filmuk.com. Paula's other venture is filmandfurniture.co.uk, and my art side is paulwestart.co.uk.
Amazing. Again, bloody honour. Thank you again so much, Paul, and I hope you have a very, very lovely rest of your day.
That's great. You're welcome. So much enjoyed it. Thank you.
My gosh, folks. Hands down, this is my very favourite episode of the show to date. You'll notice that I didn't really throw in any production bells and whistles as I normally would during a regular episode of the show because, look, this didn't really need any of that. This was such a naturally flowing conversation that I honestly felt it would have taken away from all of the incredible stories Paul had to share with us about working with the girls. I can't put into words how grateful I am to have been given this opportunity and that Paul even agreed to come on the podcast. The visuals for the Form era of Girls Aloud releases, for me, remain the greatest, most striking artworks within their entire back catalogue. And to be able to bring you some of Paul from Form's story of that time truly has meant the absolute world to me. I want to thank again Paul from Form, but also to send some thanks to Paula from Form as well. And most importantly, I'd like to thank you all listening to the podcast right now. I apologize if I haven't had a chance to reply to everybody's messages or comments. I will get to them all at some point. Obviously, I've been really, really flat out over the last month or so, but I do see the outpouring of love from so many of you for the podcast, and I can't tell you how special that's been for me to see and to keep seeing it as the podcast has been going on over the last few months. A lot of work goes into this show, and I'm just really glad people can not only see that, but also see themselves in the level of passion I really do have for the girls and all of their output. And look, speaking of, I'm guessing you all bloody want to know what episode 7 will be. No joke, it won't even be a week after I release an episode before I start getting messages and comments, when is the next episode? Oh my god, girlies, listen. When I want everybody to know the date of an episode, it'll appear on all of the show's social media accounts at Aloud Podcast, all one word, on both Twitter and Instagram. So, just read between the lines. When I want you to know when the date of episode 7 drops, I'll be dropping it on Instagram and Twitter. So keep an eye out if there's no post there. Maybe don't ask because there's no date to be announced if there's no post. So, as for what I'll be covering for episode 7, well, this is actually one that I know a lot of you are really excited to hear getting an episode. Joined in the virtual studio by my very special guest for June, the UK's Jo Anderton, we'll be sitting down to chat about every single episode of the Girls Aloud Smash mini docu-series, Off the Record, by way of the stunning DVD release of it. One of the greatest series in UK reality television history, Girls Aloud's Off the Record is cherished to this day by Alouders and British TV stands alike. So hopefully, Joe and myself will do this incredible series the justice it so richly deserves. Episode 7 coming late June. However, I am around other places if you just can't wait until then. First off, I have a monthly radio show on Mixcloud called The Record Doctor. The next episode of that airs this Thursday, May the 26th, from 7 p.m. Melbourne time. I also have a semi-fortnightly podcast, it's brand new, called The Doctor Pop Pod, or The Record Doctor's Pop Podcast. Episode 1 covered Charlie XCX's Crash, and that's out now, with episode 2 covering Serbia at the Eurovision dropping this week, most likely tomorrow. And I also co-host This Is Disco with the wonderful Eliza Day. Now, This Is Disco, of course, being our iconic, even if I do say so myself, Danny and Kylie Minogue commentary podcast. And this month's Danny episode is an absolute joy. And it was such a delight to put together with Eliza. So, yes, The Record Doctor on Mixcloud, The Doctor Pop Pod on podcasting, and This Is Disco with Eliza Day, also on podcasting. For more information on any of the aforementioned, just head on over to the show's official website, which is www.therecorddoctor.com. Until next month, stay gorgeous, my fellow Alouders, and I'll see you in late June for Off the Record with Joe. Bye.
You Can't Mistake Their Anthology is a monthly pop podcast written, edited, and produced by Adam Eve for The Record Doctor.